Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Mindfulness bell. It rings so that we can stop and we can enter into the sacred moment. And you know, all we ever have is the moment. And as we open to this eternal now moment, we realize that the past is included, but yet it does not dominate. The future also exists in the present moment, but yet we're not leaping into it with a what if. We're just smiling to the future, which emerges out of our quality involvement in the present moment. And so there's a whole different way of approaching life. Last month, we explored a new design for living, and we smiled to this idea of a life that's lived one breath at a time, where there's no longer a little dictator within our being, but rather we find the lover that's inherent within ourselves. My prayer partner sent me an interview of Richard Rohr with Brené Brown, and it was a 2-hour interview where at age 79, Richard Rohr says, let's let go of the idea of God as a dictator, and let's find the God within ourselves, which is the lover. He says, let's let go of the idea of certainty and certitude that the old-time religion used to try to give us, and instead open to uncertainty and the mystery of that which can't be totally understood, but can be experienced deeply from that intuitive place of oneness. And so we come to explore this emerging sense of truth. And in this month of May, we will continue exploring the idea of emergence. What is emerging on the planet? I would suggest to you that it is the presence of love. It is the divine unveiling herself yet again as a spirit, outpicturing in diversity and multiplicity, but it is the same spirit. And then we don't fixate on the dream of yesterday or the dream of tomorrow, but we open to this something much larger. Seamus reminded me it's the context of life. It's the spaciousness of life that we open to, not the content, not the facts, not the history or the herstory, but the context in which we all meet, that field that Rumi speaks about, where ideas are not necessary, words get in the way, the idea, each other, as separate selves does not exist, and we meet in this field of love. We meet in this field of I don't know. And we smile because something does know. And we don't have to figure it out with our little mind. And so we give our little mind a break. There's a part of us that wants answers, But there's another part of us that it's perfectly fine living in the question. So could we open to the question? How would this divine presence? Last week when I closed the talk, I talked about Pachamama as the divine mother. We see her all around in this beautiful planet. And then I spoke about Pachipapa, which is the celestial, the divine father. And what would our life look like if we could take our inner feminine and our inner masculine as the yin-yang of our beingness and let this life emerge in creative ways that the local self can't even imagine? How would that reveal? How would that express? How would that unfold? With playfulness, with grace, with spontaneity. And then we live in the question. How then shall we live knowing that we shall die? So then death is a part of life. And you hear Rumi saying, die, die, die. Die to the old idea so that something new can give birth within you. You hear the scripture that says, die daily to be born again in thee, in this presence. Today I'm exploring the flow of light. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. The I am is the light of the world. So could we enter into our light body this Sunday morning and smile? It's not my light or your light, it is the light. And when we say you are the light of the world, we meet in that field of light and of love this Sunday morning. There's nothing to do. And when you're ready to do nothing, I invite you to open your eyes and to look around at your own self. You know, it's all the presence of the One showing itself to us uniquely. I love springtime because this life force that we know intimately within ourselves, we see exploding all around us. It's truly showing off. And if you don't take time to observe, Lee and Nancy talked about these tall yellow flowers, and in horticulture they call them the DYCs, the damn yellow composites. There's so many of them, we don't even know what they are, but they're big and yellow and they're everywhere. So you're seeing a DYC, a damn yellow composite. And then you can laugh, because we don't have to know exactly what it is. Yes, I have a degree in horticulture, so I kind of know the Latin names of everything. But now I kind of want to release all that information and just see it as an expression of this unique life, and that it's all out there dancing so that we can have a relationship with it. I have bunny rabbits in my yard, and somehow bunny rabbits get a pass when they eat the things out of your garden, whereas the chipmunks and the squirrels don't. So I realize that I have a little bit of a prejudice operating in me. Some are good little vermin and some are not good little vermin. And you get to see how the mind wants to categorize and label instead of just allow and accept and celebrate. Yeah, so this month of May, I'm going to explore an idea which was from a book years ago written by Barbara Marx Hubbard, and the book was called Emergence. And she inspired a whole series of classes that we did here at the center, Wanda Gale and myself, and the class was called Living the Essential Self. And before we would launch a batch of ministers out into the world, they were required to take the Living the Essential Self class, which was about finding that essence self within you. And know that that is what we cultivate, and that is what really lives your life. It's that context that Seamus was alluding to in the revealing service. There is this field of pure awareness, this presence. It's the One that knows no other. Jesus called it the kingdom of heaven that's within us and all around us. And we get to experience it at the soul level. And you know, it's interesting. My brother Terry, he listens to Ram Dass. And Ram Dass, at the end of his beautiful life, as he evolved, he would stress the fact that we are a soul. We are an eternal soul. And when you start relating from the soul level, you realize that the soul was never born and the soul never dies. And so then when you have a passing of a living saint like Thich Nhat Hanh, he says, I didn't end. I didn't die. He said, I continue on. So when you don't see me as the cloud, you're going to see me as the rain. So could we practice continuation? and see that this life force is always there. Adam came over this week and he was helping me carry out the plants in the house. And when Trey and I moved here to the South in 1978, I remember because I had my 30th birthday when I moved to Atlanta, I came down from Maine with some cuttings from Maine, little cactus cuttings. And so now one of the cactuses is as big as me, or maybe as big as Bob Dee's. She is a big cactus. And he said, how old is this? I said, well, if I do my math right, I'm 73. I guess it's a 43-year-old cactus. And so one of the stems of the cactus, she's huge, fell off, and I gave it to Adam. And we were cleaning out the basement, and there was this pink porcelain planter. And I said, you know, that's the planter that that cactus came in when I moved here from Maine. So I handed him the pink planter. I handed him the sprig of the cactus. And then he sent me a photograph. He sprigged the cactus in the little pink planter, and it continues on. So that 43-year-old cactus now has a new start in a new life. And what if that's kind of what we're doing by coming here to the center? At whatever age you are, there's a continuation of something that is that's still here. And yes, we go through, on the beautiful tapes of of Richard Rohr, he talks about how we had the whole idea of God wrong. We called it God the Almighty, thinking that God was the thing that could fix everything. He says, but the true God is God the All-Vulnerable, God the Suffering. Now, we don't want to think of God as suffering, that God would feel the suffering of the planet. But he's saying, think of God as the lover, not as the dictator. He says that we got to get rid of the idea of God as dictator and find God as the vulnerable lover. And when we have our own vulnerability, that's an opening for grace. That's an opening for this divine love. Wow. Well, then God, the all-suffering, is there to embrace the suffering on the planet. And he's saying it's time for us to move out of certainty into this new way of perceiving things. And so here I'm seeing a man at his age of 79. He says, I won't be on the planet much longer, but his message is as revolutionary as it always has been. We have to die to the old idea of how we perceive things in order for something greater. And in order to do that, there has to be change. You know, it was Richard Rohr who humorously said to Brené Brown, he said, everybody wants transformation, but nobody wants to change. And that's the problem. In order to have a transformation, you're going to have to change. You're going to have to let go of the person that you were. Maybe it's the victim of your story. I know when I came to the center, I was in my early 30s and I was a mess. And I realized that I was a mess because I had identified with this part of myself that has a suffering element to it. It's funny, Richard Rohr says one of the classic wounds that we all suffer is the wound of the father. And he said, and so in our religions, we make God the father because of this wound we have with the father. And the name in Aramaic that Jesus chose was Abba. And Abba means daddy. So we're trying to heal our daddy issues by making this God into a daddy that's a loving daddy, that's a loving presence, the beloved, not a punishing daddy, not a, you know, an angry, not a dictator daddy, but something that's embracing us. Now, at 79, he's basically turning the tables on the institutional church of God the Almighty, who has all the answers, and saying open to the mystery of an all-suffering and all-loving presence that's there for all of us. It's a whole different way of seeing life. And to find someone who's on the same page as you, who's willing to step into an evolutionary consciousness, this emerging consciousness of what Barbara Marx Hubbard calls the homo universalis, the universal human, seeing with the eyes of oneness. We just finished the beautiful Thich Nhat Hanh book, and he talked about a new order of being, and he called it the conscious human. So in this month of May, I'm going to explore this flow of light, which we all share. Then in the second week, I love building on one theme of emergence. In the second week, we're going to look at how that light is conscious, that it's an awake awareness. And then you begin to see that everything is awake. The tree is awake. My beloved daughter stood out at a tree and was taking darshan from the tree. So that little dog that leapt into the hammock is fully awake and aware that it wants to be with its lover. And so it leaps up into the hammock. Trey used to have a hammock. I called it his office. And it was in the backyard. It's the best place he spent most of his time. And as fate would have it, you can't get attached to even the very thing that seems to be your liberation place because someone stole the hammock out of the backyard. And then I was a victim for maybe 24 hours until I realized you don't need the hammock. Life is greater than the hammock experience. And then you find a chaise lounge, which is perfectly fine. And then the chaise lounge is taken. And you think, well, then you have St. Francis on the front porch. And they steal St. Francis from the porch. Then you realize, I don't need St. Francis. I don't need the hammock. I can find peace wherever. It's not conditional to the outer. So when this something becomes conscious, that's what we call an awakening. An awakening to who am I? You know, and that's the great Ramana Maharshi question. It's called Vaichara. Who am I? And you live in that question. Who am I? Am I the skin-encapsulated ego that's filled with my story and my frustrations and my drama? Or am I the presence of the one ever emerging in the world as a conscious, awake light, and your light beings? It's so funny. I have so many references to light. And, you know, in the Quran, they say, Nur ala Nur, light upon light. So the night in Angkor meets the night light in Anastasia, and it's the same light, and they see that in one another. So Nur ala Nur, light upon light. It says in the Buddhist teachings, be a light unto the world. It says in the Christian teachings, I am the light of the world. In this lovely book, Let There Be Light, The Seven Keys to Transformation, Dr. Rocco Errico talks about the biblical reference to light, and he starts at the very beginning. You know, the very first words of the Bible are, in the beginning, God. And it says, and darkness was on the face of the earth, and God said, let there be light. So the very first action of this omnipotent presence is to create this light. And the word that was used was Shekinah. It's the light within. So it starts off with the light. And then in the New Testament, you get this God-intoxicated rabbi named Jesus, who had the chutzpah to say, I am the light of the world. Now, he was talking metaphorically, but he was talking symbolically of that very thing that we share. He says, light means a clear teaching, and Jesus referred to himself as the light of the world as an expression which signified that his teaching was like a great luminary that would illumine our consciousness. So this is what we're exploring, is this light awakening within all of us, and have an intimate relationship with it. Man sees clearly when there is light, and where there is light, man need not falter, he says. So you, he says, are the light of the world, and we have a responsibility to let love, justice, compassion, and goodness shine through us as a way for life to illuminate the world. He who follows my teaching, as Jesus would say, shall not walk in darkness or ignorance, but shall find for himself the light of the world. John 8:12. Huh. So we can go back to our roots and use a sleuth-like way of approaching it. Jesus didn't tell us to worship him. He never said that. He talked about this light inherent within all creation. So could we open to this light that he embodied and find it right there within ourself to see it's everywhere revealing itself? Play with the light. So in the second week, we're going to talk about making this light conscious. In the third week, we're going to go into the Sufi idea to catch on fire with the light, that the light is the light of love, and it wants to burn us up. Oh, that's uncomfortable. Can you see yourself on fire with love, Anastasia? It doesn't feel very fun because it burns away everything that's unlike itself. And nobody wants, last week I talked about burning away everything that's unnecessary. Well, there's going to be an awe and growth when you do that. And then this something will set us on fire. Then the fourth week, we're going to look about finding the extraordinary in the ordinary, because you begin to see God everywhere, in the smallest of things. And then you realize the only thing that has changed is my perception. I can see clearly now. It's all the light of the one revealing itself. And then the last week, and I always love to go back to this, what is the way of practice? You know, once you become conscious and awake, and you realize that this is all the energy of light and love, what is your practice? And I would suggest that your practice is your life. It's not something that you do separate on a Monday morning from 10 to 8. You know, I love that people go to these support groups and all that, and that's a wonderful thing to create Sangha. But ultimately, your practice is how you get up in the morning. And can you greet the day? This is the day the Lord has made, and I have 24 hours to experience this day on this beautiful planet. You know, I sleep with a pug, a one-eyed pug. And every morning he wakes up and he does his little snorts. And if I leave the bed like I do, I get up early, he'll sit at the edge of the bed and demand that I come and pick him up. Well, I have a day too, and you know, I need to celebrate it. You know, I've learned that when that voice comes through me, that's Bert. He kind of lives in me. Well, of course I live in you. You told me that I would always be with you. And so I have to go home and listen to what I say on Sunday because Bert shows up. Well, of course I show up. I'm here. You know that I'm here. And I say, I know. So the pug and I go outside at 5 a.m, and he does his business, and he waddles hither and yon. He's really blind with the one eye. He has cataracts. Trey wants him to have cataract surgery, and I said, with what he's been through, he's going to have to learn to fumble around with his one cataract eye. He can still smell, and he can't hear very well, but he's on the planet, and he doesn't complain. You know, he rejoices that it takes forever to find that perfect place to lift his leg. You know, he's got that discernment, you know. We could call it uncertainty, but, you know, I find it enchanting because he's not going to go out and do his business like Baby Speck would do. She was in and out, did her business. No. Takes him at least 20 minutes to find that perfect little shrub to lift the leg on, to find that perfect thing so he can circle and then counter circle until he has that perfect place. Anastasia knows what that's like. And in a way, it's a beautiful way of honoring his journey. He's showing me how to be still and to have the simple moments. And he has separation anxiety. That's one of his issues. And so when I went to teach the class this week, Trey's out of town. He's up in upstate New York spreading his sister's ashes. And he found the grave of Biff. And Susan's ashes are now with Biff. And he's really happy about that. And so he's having his catharsis up there. But in the meantime, I have a pug who has separation anxiety. So I went to Gigi and Raul's for dinner. I had to bring the pug with me and put him in his stroller so he didn't have to feel abandoned and rejected. He doesn't like to be left alone. And he'll let you know that. He's probably sitting at the doorway right now at home barking for me to come and get him. And I just realized that I'll just let him sit there and have his moment of withdrawal. It's good for him, right, Anastasia? He needs to, you know that he's not abandoned, that I do love him. I'll be back after church. Yeah, so this is the flow. In the Sufi tradition, and I love to say this at a funeral, they say when you incarnate on the planet, you incarnate with love and light. And when you leave this planet, you take the light with you and you leave the love behind. Now, it's kind of fun to play with that. So there's a wonderful song of Jack Fowler's. After his partner died of AIDS in the 1980s, he wrote a song that's to his partner, which goes, "We don't have to say goodbye. The best part of you, you leave behind." And so, yes, the form may have went, but the love is still there. So could we be strange enough to relate to that which doesn't die, to that which is always there, this love that we share? And then, you know, then, yes, the form may go, but the love is there as an intimate presence. You know, you feel the love of Jesus when you read his writings. My favorite gospel is the Gospel of Thomas because it's just the logians. It's the sayings of Jesus. It's none of the hearsay about his life. And it says, and the master said this, and the master said that. And, you know, Jesus, in one of the logians, if you liberate that which is within you, that which is within you will save you. If you do not liberate that which is within you, that which is within you will destroy you. Now, who wants to hear that? Oh, so what is that something that we're here to liberate? That's this light thing that's emerging. And then could we play with that light and that love? And notice where it shows up in your life. I reference the pug because he is an ambassador of light in my life. Even though he is compromised, he is really sacred for me. And so then we begin to relate to life in a different sort of way. My prayer partner went out to dinner with a couple in his church, and he said, "You remember them. We had dinner at their house." Well, he's 92 now, and they were supposed to have dinner on Monday night. And Terry, my prayer partner, finished a funeral yesterday. It was Saturday. And they called him and said, "We're expecting you for dinner at 5:30. And he says, "Well, the dinner date was for Monday, but at 92, they'd forgotten and they expected him on Saturday." So he says, "I decided, well, I can come anytime." So he went over to the house on Saturday night. And he said, this lovely couple, they're starting to lose their mind. They can't remember dates and this is and that. And he says, there's kind of a sacredness that you have when you know somebody like an old pug who's getting older, but yet there's a quality with him I still consider it a great privilege when Bert got so compromised at the end that every day was sacred. I would go out there and I'd have to take him out at 2 a.m. because he couldn't hold his bladder. And then he made clear to me, well, I need to go in the middle of the night too. And I said, well, of course you need to go out at 2 a.m. Everybody needs to pee in the middle of the night, don't we? Especially when you get to be a certain age. So then Bert and I would go out at 2 a.m. And then I'd carry him up the steps. And I treasured that last period of his time with me. So I'm going to share with you, Helen Street, we teach by example. And when I went into religious science years ago, 33 years ago, I remember I was at a Sillamar and I had a meltdown. They know who the old David was, meltdown. And I remember going to a workshop afterwards and I'm crying. And they said, what's the problem? And I said, there's no love in this organization. and then someone said, that's yours to bring. And I realized that was what I was here to bring, the love. And there was one minister, her name was Helen Street, and she would stand outside, and it's like she was lit up from within. And she was so loving. Someone would come up to her in a wheelchair, and she'd get on her knees, and she'd put her hands on their hands, and she'd talk to them. And I realized, I said, you're this radiant beacon of light. And Helen said, don't confuse the lamp for the light. She says, some people will project onto me and think that I'm so loving, but she says, I am just a conduit for the love. I am just a conduit for the light. So she was showing me at the very beginning, through her example, how to be in the world, to be this love that saw everything as her own self and was humble enough to meet people where they are and not have this kind of elitist idea that I've arrived at some kind of place where I'm better than others. No, she was a humble servant of the love. And so, I finished this class recently, Awakening the World, Llewellyn Von Lee. He's one of my teachers as well. And I watched him as he evolved from being a Sufi teacher to being an environmentalist who only teaches oneness now. And in his book, Awakening the World, he talks about the imperative of this emerging consciousness that comes through light and love to awaken within humanity. And so he talks very much like a scientist. And he says there's the lumina dei, which is the light of God. You know, when we meditate and we go into these retreats, we're seeking to experience this light of this transcendent something. But then he says there's also the lumina naturae, which is the light within nature. And it's the same light. Now, could we be sleuth-like enough? Because you have to be very vigilant and be attentive. He says, be attentive to see this light emerging all around you. I love it when Lee and Nancy take their walks. They're tuning in to this light that they see reflected. And so here's how he expresses our relationship with this flowing light that's all around us. It's such a beautiful, beautiful book. At the end, he said, in this light, we will see life differently. We will see a different world. It will become visible to us from our intuition. I love that Anastasia talked about intuition. Intuition is spirit in the soul of man. So could we defer to this imagination, to this intuition, to this gnosis, this G-N-O-S-I-S, that's not logical, but that's a felt awareness. So we have this light within us that's waking up, that's bringing light to the darkness, to the confusion. And then does that mean you have all the answers? Do you have certitude? No, no, no. If you're like Rumi, you say, I am astounded, lucid confusion. I'm confused as all get out because this mystery is so vast and I'm a part of it. Holy cow, I'm transforming. Here's what he says. The anima mundi, this is the soul of the world, and the light of the soul is the spirit within matter, and that makes life dance. It awakens in us to the simple joy of what is. Spirit is awakening within our soul. To know ourselves is that, you know? I am the light of the world, Jesus said. Ram Dass at the end would say, I am the soul of the universe. You know, there's Brahman, which is the one that knows no other. And then there's the Atman. And he says the Atman and the Brahman are one. So the soul within is part of the context of the Brahman. That's the God that's all around us. And they're the same. It's the same light. So he's saying, experience this directly. Our world is presently asleep. Its magical powers are for the most part dormant, but they are present nonetheless, and they're waiting to be used in order to transform our world. So to use the light that's within you, to open to it, to get curious about it, to discover it, to have the beginner's mind. You know, you got to be playful. When that little baby came through Stephanie and that little light was shining through her eyes, she's right there connected to the light and the love. She hasn't been programmed into being a somebody yet. Ram Dass says, you know, you come here as a nobody and then you go into somebody training. And that's the problem. Because once you become a super somebody, then you got to go back into nobody training again to discover who you really are. And then that something awakens and it goes, my God, when I know that I'm nobody separate, well, then I'm everybody and everything. That's the invitation of this light. We do not dare to recognize that a real miracle is the unexpected. It is the divine that is awakening up in life itself. So then just sit with that. The divine is wakening up in life itself. Are you ready to wake up? Even though it'll say you aren't. That's the idea of emptiness. There is no Michael Short. There's only the love of God revealed through Michael Short. Then you go, yeah, I'm ready to have this kind of dual nature. Yeah, I've got a finite self. That's the part of me that wails and suffers. But there's also this presence within that smiles, that says it is what it is. That's why I'm going to be doing that lovely little book, Ordinary Freedom, because John Burney speaks about, in such a clear, non-dual way, everything is here for you. And it's your resistance to it that creates the suffering. And then when you open to this existential wound, like the wound of the father, we have to create a God that's patriarchal in order to heal that. And almost every, Richard Rohr says, almost every young man has the wound of the father. He was doing a prison ministry and he referred to one of his young inmates as my son. And the inmate just got furious at him. And he realized that he still had issues around the father. And so what if we get to meet those wounds, those holy wounds, in a playful, creative sort of way? As we turn away from our ego toward the soul, we see more of the soul's power and the soul's purpose. Its light is the ordering principle in our lives then, and it can create harmony in those desperate aspects of the psyche. You know how the psyche is? That's that subconscious mind that Jung talked about. And he says, we have to make the darkness of our psyche conscious so that we can transcend it. And then this is the work. Its light is the ordering principle of our lives, and it can create harmony in those desperate aspects of the psyche and bring a mandala of the self with the big S into being. A mandala of the self. Have you ever done any mandala workshops? They put a little picture of you in the center of the mandala, and then all the different parts are how you relate to the world. So what if in our mandala, in our emergence, we put source at the center and we are emerging as the one creative something that doesn't have conclusions, that's not concretized, that's not almighty, but is all vulnerable. It is the great love that we've been seeking that would have us dissolve into it, not stay, you know, I've got all the answers. No, we live in the uncertainty of the next breath. Wow. That's why I'm wearing this thing on Ukraine. I have faith that something, there's a puppy in here somewhere. Jody keeps reminding me. And I'm going to keep knowing that the puppies of the universe are emerging through this courage and through this commitment to democracy and helping one another. Something good is coming out of this. He says, when her light is awakened, the light of the one, then she can bring into the world harmony and balance. And this simple and radical truth was known to all the alchemists. The alchemy of love, the alchemy of light. You know, you turn lead into gold. You turn suffering into compassion. The alchemy of the soul. The simple and radical truth was known to the alchemists. It is the light that is hidden within matter, and this is the light that will redeem the world. This is the light that needs to awaken within the world, and it needs you in order for it to awaken. So that's the beginning of this idea of emergence. Could I touch the light within and then drink from the river of light? Mark Nepo wrote a wonderful book called Drinking from the River of Light, and he starts in that book with a painting of William Butler Yeats. And the painting is of him on his knees at the foot of a waterfall. And the waterfall is a luminous waterfall. And the title of the painting is called Drinking from the River of Light. And then his metaphor, because he is a poet, he says, what if that's all any of us are really doing? There is this river of light, this something that we get to drink from. And it gets to open our eyes to a different way of seeing. We bring light to the darkness. We bring order to the chaos. And then you see this beautiful divine pattern that's revealed throughout all creation, which is a death and a rebirth pattern. We die to an old relationship in order for this new pattern to emerge. You know, I think that probably the saddest moment, most painful moment in my long-lived life was when I was 21 years old and my first relationship broke up. And it needed to break up. It was, everybody could see it but me. And when it did break up, I was just bereft. I remember we were going to fly to Europe. We were getting on the plane at New York Kennedy Airport. And he basically said, "I'm not going with you." We had 3-month Eurail passes. He said, "I'm going back to Colorado. I met a guy named Trey, and he and I are going to run off to the happily ever after place." And I'm 21, and I'm flying over there, crying all the way. And I remember saying, "Where am I going to go when I get there?" You know, and someone had given me the name of a person who lived at Radnor Mansion. Sounds kind of an important place. He was an older gay man, and his tenant upstairs was a man named Walter Plunkett. And Walter Plunkett was the designer, the costume designer for Gone with the Wind, Singing in the Rain. He did all Katharine Hepburn's designs. He's won all kinds of Academy Awards. And he was an American, and I was a mess. And so Ernest Stanton said, "Why don't you go talk to my friend Walter? He lives upstairs." And I'm sitting there all absorbed with my tale of woe. And he looked at me like, "You'll get over it. You don't realize it. You're 21, but you will get over this thing." And he sat down with me with a map of Europe. This is when they had maps. And he plotted out my 3-month trip. I had no clue where I was going. He had me going here and had me going there. And he said, "Make sure you see this." And it's so funny because it was only afterwards, when I was there, Debbie Reynolds pulled up in a cab. She was visiting Walter. He had pictures of Katharine Hepburn all around his apartment. I didn't have a clue. I was all about me and my story and my struggle. And you know, I got through that period of time, and the grace was that I found myself. Now, it's so funny. Trey is up in New York spreading the ashes, and he and his sister went out to dinner. These are the synchronicities of life. And sitting in this restaurant near him are two young gay men from London who just had come to the States, and they had a 3-month pass where they were going to explore it, and they didn't have a clue. So they spent their whole night in the restaurant helping this little gay couple plot their trip out. I said, "You had a Walter Plunkett moment in the middle of that restaurant." They thought they could just get in a cab and go to Chicago. They didn't realize how vast and big America is. And so he sat down with them and helped them plan this entrance into an adventure, into a discovery process. And the grace is, in all of life, when you get to a certain stage in life, you realize that all of that was necessary. You know, I did need to have my heart broken in order for me to turn within and find a love that doesn't die, a love that doesn't abandon you. And then had I abandoned me, and is what I had. I had projected that the love was out here, that it had to come from that source. And when you put your good outside yourself, you're destined to really have a life lesson. Because the love you're looking for, in fact, one of the greatest things Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind, you could all boil it down to one sentence: the thing you're looking for, you're looking with. So we're all looking for this something, and it's within ourselves. Now, we can call it light. We can call it peace. We can call it nirvana. Nancy's found nirvana all of a sudden, and nirvana was always there, but at 71 now, she's found nirvana. Oh my God, I found nirvana. It was there all along, but it took me this long to find it. And then you realize, what if life is this beautiful experience? You know, it was Helen Keller who said, "What is life but a glorious adventure?" Now, here's a woman who was deaf and blind, and she could call life a glorious adventure. And then she said, "And we are here to discover how it emerges through our heart, through moments of intimacy with the moment." And then everything is this intimate dance with the one that knows no other. I'm going to invite my brother Raul to go back to the bell. And I'm going to leave you with a little bit of Mark Nepo on this idea of what the light is from this beautiful book. He says, "When I write, I'm trying to reach the river of light that informs all of life to drink from this river." And so he says, "So I consider myself a conduit for the life force in the world. A conduit is an opening." You know, Mother Teresa, "I'm merely a pen through which the Christ writes his music." So to see ourselves as an instrument for the divine. He says, "I'm only trying to bring those who are willing with me to come to this river of light where we can all drink and look at each other through awakened eyes. The light in me sees the light in you. The love in me sees the love in you. It's the same light. All forms of expression and education are meant to awaken the love that is possible in the world. We can only find love in the world when love awakens in here. Is that too big, too daunting an idea? To know that the love of God exists within you and you get to offer it to everyone? He says in his simplicity, you simply have to open your heart and let what's in there flow. Just to open your heart. I love it when Terry Boy talked about getting in his hammock to recuperate and the dog decided to jump up into the hammock. Now, this was the old dog that by all means should have been lifted into the hammock, but he was so driven by this force of love, he leapt into the hammock. You simply have to open your heart and let what's there flow, and then the rest will take care of itself. Expression will find you. For water finds water, light finds light, feelings find meaning, and love finds love. I went to a wedding rehearsal, and I found Tia, and she's never left my side since then. It was light finding light. So be an inlet and an outlet for this flow of light, for this flow of love, for this flow of insight, and then get drunk on the light of the one. Rumi talks about the tavern of love, and he says, we'll meet in the tavern of love. And so you go to the Tavern of Love, we could call it the Center for Spiritual Living, and you're drinking from the River of Light until you get drunk on that light. You're drunk on that feeling of love. Have you ever felt so in love? I remember going on these spiritual retreats with Gangaji, and I'd be so intoxicated on the love that I would be hugging people at the TSA when I'd be going there. And I realized I have to dial it down, like Seamus said. And I also remember leaving that feeling, that love fest, when everybody was so in that vortex of light and love, going to a restaurant and looking around and everybody shut down. Nobody's talking to anybody. And I'm sitting at my table and tears are coming down and the waiter said, are you okay? And I said, where's the love? You know, once you've experienced it, you feel the absence of it when it's not there. So I'm going to invite my brother to ring the mindfulness bell. As we stop and we smile and we feel that flow of light that's always there, and we hear Jesus saying, I am the light of the world, and what I do, you too shall do, and greater. And so when he recognized that the light of the world exists within him, that is the lumina dei and the lumina naturae coming together in one holy instant of awareness. And we smile to this luminous feeling of presence. We see it in the world emerging through the trees and the plants. There are so many flowers right now exploding in the garden as an expression of the one life, uniquely individualized. No carbon copy there. Each one is a different expression of beauty. And then we realize that the beauty is the revelation of the presence. We see it in the little ducklings that are following their mother at the pond. We see it in the old dog that leaps in the hammock, that still has enough zip to claim its rightful place, heart to heart, with its owner. And then we question, are we really the owner? Are we the servant of the God called dog? And then we smile to this interrelationship with all life. And so we open this Sunday morning to that flow of light, that flow of love, that awareness that is becoming conscious within us. And we wait upon the Lord, as it says in the Bible. Now, the Lord is another name for the law, spiritual law. And we can't escape. All is love and all is law. So the law is always operating. And oftentimes we operate the law unconsciously. You know, but now we're choosing to be conscious, to watering seeds of hope and seeds of compassion, and knowing that the seeds that we water will grow in the field of our awareness, in the garden of our soul. And so we come to this creative place to water the seeds of possibility. Ernest Holmes referred to the divine presence as the totality of possibilities. Now, is that too an expansive an idea of the universe? And so as we open to the possibilities of love unfolding by means of us, we then wait upon the law to provide an opportunity for that to happen. Maybe we encounter someone who is similar to ourselves and who's gone through a heartbreak, and we meet in that brokenhearted place together. And in that shared suffering, we find freedom and peace and a healing. And so this Sunday morning, we open to those wounds, whatever they might be. And we go to the root of the root of the self. We go to the cause. And we embrace that little wounded one who wants to be held and seen and nurtured. It doesn't want any answers, doesn't want any conclusions, doesn't want any advice or opinions, but just wants to be loved. And so we love that little fearful part of ourselves, that confused part, that suffering part. And embracing it, we notice how the sufferer just kind of feels held, and we directly experience this love. We are held in the hands of grace, forever safe in the arms of love. Like a child who needs protection from a mother's warm embrace, we are held in the hands of grace. And we smile to that awareness. We sit with intention. We open our chest. We open our heart chakra. We imagine that our head and our heart are congruent. They Sufis say, put your head into your heart. And then we think loving thoughts. And when we're being loving, we're being godlike, because God is love. And then with the noise outside, we don't take the chaos on the outside and put it on the inside, but we smile to the chaos. We smile to the disorder, because we know that a new order is emerging. And we are safe. We are held. We are loved. And so to this nurturing presence that we feel, let's join in the heart salutation by saying to this loving presence, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the radiant presence of the One.
You are the radiant presence of the One.
Ever emerging throughout all creation.
Ever emerging throughout all creation.
Shining from within.
Shining from within.
Shining without.
Shining without.
Reflecting the One Life.
Reflecting the One Life.
A flame with spirit.
A flame with spirit.
Shining.
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 Shining. And we open our eyes and we look around and we see the light reflected back. It's all you, it's all God, and it's all here for us. So thank you for sending in your tithes, everybody. Happy Mother's Day next week. We have special music, so plan to come a little early and we'll hear some beautiful music from the heart.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.thecenterforspiritualliving.com. cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new